helping students and healthcare professionals not just survive, but thrive with a purpose. This is the CMDA Student Pulse Podcast with your host, Bill Reichart, National Director of CMDA Campus Ministries.
Well, welcome to another episode of CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast. I'm Bill Reichart, National Director for our Campus and Community Ministries here at CMDA. My guest today is Dr. Chris Lasanti. Chris, welcome.
Well, thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're going to talk about human flourishing. And before we dive in with Chris on this, let me tell our watchers, our listeners, a little bit about you, Chris. You graduated from the United States Air Force Academy with a Bachelor of Science degree and got your medical degree from the Uniformed Service University of Health Sciences in Bethesda, Maryland. You're a radiologist. You're practicing currently in Texas, if I'm not correct, right?
Yes, sir. There. Yeah, at Brooke Army Medical Center.
Mm-hmm. And you have your own podcast on human flourishing. Yeah. It's called The Roots of Flourishing, I believe. And you're a writer on this subject, again, a communicator. Mm-hmm. So I'm really happy to have you as our guest today to talk about a very important subject. So thank you, Chris.
Well, thank you, Bill. It's a real pleasure to be here. And I'm always just really excited whenever I have an opportunity to go ahead and talk a little bit more about, you know, how we flourish as human beings, and particularly from a Christian perspective.
Yeah. Well, let's explore that idea a little bit more. You know, you're a radiologist. How did this idea of human flourishing kind of come on your radar screen? How did you become interested in it? In this concept of flourishing?
Well, like many things in life, it was a backdoor sort of event. Mm. So when I retired from the Air Force back in 07, I really felt like a call from the Lord to get off of the stands and onto the playing field of the pro-life movement. And so I went ahead and called up one of our local pregnancy centers. And I said, well, can you use a radiologist? And they said, oh, could we ever our ultrasounds, you know? And so one thing led to another, and I went to a CareNet conference where I met Dr. Sandy Christensen, who's the medical advisor, director for CareNet. Mm-hmm. And she said, you're a radiologist? We could use a radiologist. that seems to be the theme. We could really use a radiologist.
Yes.
You know, and it's funny because I went into radiology thinking, is this really going to have a whole lot to do with medical missions or Christian outreach and stuff like that? Well, I couldn't be further wrong on that one. And God, of course, is you know, always humbling us in many, many fashions and ways. But so then I got on the medical advisory board, and for several years, not a whole lot happened. But then there was an AMA ethics article that the title was Crisis Pregnancy Centers, Legal but Unethical. And so she wrote to me, knowing that I was in academic medicine and I published not necessarily on ethics or philosophy articles or anything like that, but they were going to go ahead and write a letter to the editor. And so I reviewed it and I said, well, that would be nice. But really what we need to do is write a good reasoned response to their objections to crisis pregnancy centers. Because certainly I was at that point very involved, read, you know, thousands of studies over the course of my career, and thought that what we were doing was not only just ethical, but I truly believe it's the Lord's work, truly ministering to the least of these and saving lives and things of that nature. So that started making me think about what exactly is the difference. Why are people ostensibly on good sides, you know, trying to do good things for people, for patients particularly, coming to completely diametrically opposed viewpoints on something as fundamental as abortion? And so it really came to the point of they're starting from different starting points, really. Mm-hmm. Their foundational assumptions are quite different. And the assumptions that I had about what medicine was really all about in terms of the promoting the health and healing of sick and suffering patients was turned on its head. And so I went ahead and then started to write an article on the philosophy of medicine, particularly when it came to crisis pregnancy centers, but later on then expanded from there. So it was really a backdoor sort of thing where it was more of an ethics related thing. But then I came to the realization and the conclusion that it really wasn't just an ethics of what we should or shouldn't be doing for patients, but more foundational, what it really means to be human. And hence, you know, the whole idea of what human flourishing and human and what it is to be human really started as. So that's kind of the long story to the short question.
So how do those intersect? What does it mean to be human? And then this idea of flourishing, how are they related?
Well, we have to understand how we're designed, how we're created by the Lord, really. Right. And I don't think it's, you know, and we in medicine study very, very much about how the body should be functioning, okay, in terms of the normal limits, okay? Mm-hmm. And really our goal as physicians is to try to bring the human body back into normal limits, certainly trying to bring the psychologic or the mental aspects within normal limits as well. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there's all sorts of laboratory tests that physicians, medical students are inundated with. I mean, you get reams upon reams of blood work, and it'll flag things that are outside of normal limits, okay? And so really what we need to do as humans is try to figure out what normal limits start looking like. And then subsequently, that starts to become with the idea of health. So if medicine is geared towards producing health in our patients and in ourselves, hopefully, then that's health really etymologically starts coming from wholeness. So how do we make the broken person whole or try to make strides towards making them more whole? Now, certainly many of us suffer from chronic diseases and or if we're not suffering from them, we're certainly tending to and trying to minister to those who have chronic illnesses. But in a sense, we're still trying to make them as whole as possible or more whole in spite of the fact that they're broken.
Right. Well, it sounds like you're coming at this with a much more comprehensive approach. You're dealing with the biological, the psychological, social, spiritual, all these dimensions of a person and looking at the whole person rather than just a particular segment. Is that how you see it?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And so when I was going through this ethics and trying to interconnect basically or relate to or engage with the ideas that are happening in medicine today in the ethical realm is trying to go back to kind of a Mars Hill sort of experience, right? So where can we meet that we can agree upon? And so George Engel back in the 1977 put forth the biopsychosocial model, which of course is still taught in medicine today. And I think that by using that, and I think I've developed it and tried to bring it a little bit further on, it can help to bring us to the point where, okay, let's talk about what a human is, because in order to be whole or healthy, we have to have all these, you know, and Daniel Solomis, he did a good job, I think, in 2002 when he put the spiritual on the biopsychosocial spiritual. So he had been relating to patients who were end of life frequently and noted that. And it wasn't just him. It was the Hospice Association before that and thousands of years of spiritual and specifically Christian tradition that have noted that the spiritual ends up becoming a very, very important part when a person's in their end of life care. And so the spiritual aspect, and so he said that there are all these four dimensions are interrelated, okay? And that was an important aspect of how we understand ourselves as humans, is that we can't just divide ourselves into a biologic machine, and then we go, okay, you have diabetes, so we'll fix your diabetes, or you have a broken wrist, so we'll fix your broken wrist, but we're a holistic individual. Yes. And so Engel was kind of reacting against this sort of biomedical, materialistic sort of understanding of the human. And because he understood that as a psychiatrist particularly, that the human is much more than just the biology or the engineering experiment. And that really to bring about ultimate human flourishing and healing from a physician or counselor or psychiatrist, psychologist perspective, is that we have to have an understanding at least of all four of these dimensions, understanding that we can then leverage each of the other dimensions in order to bring about healing that may be going predominantly awry in one of the dimensions. So for instance, it could be marital problems or something like that. Well, that might be impacting sleep, okay? So that might also be having untoward effects upon their own health and their immune system and things of that nature. So the physician might be able to help with the sleep by maybe giving a sleep medicine or something along those lines, but predominantly the dimension that's at the problem is the social dimension. And so really referral then to a social counselor or to a pastor would then be the most appropriate and would then be able to fix the problem.
Now, what you're describing, I'm not I'm not in medicine myself, having a vocational ministry background, but am I right in suggesting that goes against the current of how medicine is approached in our society today, or is it not? Is this a view that's gaining more traction and application, or is this something that is a minority view that you know, as our students are getting trained, as doctors, are they hearing this? Is probably what I need to get to the root of the question. Are they getting this kind of approach, or are they getting a much more fractured sense? You know, we're treating people in a very materialistic, biological manner.
I think the answer is probably both. I graduated medical school back in 87, so it's been a few years for me. But the medical students and the interns and residents that I speak to certainly have all been taught about the biopsychosocial model. Okay. So that's very important, certainly introducing the spiritual. And I think the spiritual actually has gained a bit of a renaissance in the last two decades, where really it's now legitimate and people are now speaking about it and having video courses on it and actually publishing extensively on the impact of spiritual practices, religious attendance, faith, and things of that nature upon their well-being. And so I think that the spiritual, although certainly from a Christian perspective, you know, we would inform that more specifically, but I think the spiritual is becoming a bit more of a factor. But I think the difficulty is although most of us understand that the human is this multidimensional creature, it's much more complex than just a fractured wrist or a diabetes or something along those lines. I think the difficulties is that the system and the time constraints, particularly like in primary care and things of that nature, limit the amount of interaction so severely that really they can only focus in on one or at the most two things. So really, if it's a follow-up for diabetes and hypertension or a follow-up for a wrist fracture, they have so little time is they're not able to really understand, find out more about their patients, and then a little bit more about what's happening with them. Now, there are some models, particularly the ChenMed folks that I've been very, very impressed with, Gordon and Christopher Chen and their whole group. And really, it's a very different model. And so they decrease the number of people they can impanel, and that increases the amount of time and the amount of frequency. I mean, you know, it's a high touch model. And personally, from a diagnostic radiologist perspective, I'm a guy in a dark room looking at CT scans all day long. But as a patient, I have been part of cattle call medicine, really, where you're just shuffled in and shuffled out. And that really doesn't help you. And a lot of these things are chronic problems where, you know, we really need to encourage the patients as much about getting the diagnosis right as really coming alongside them. That's really truly compassion, coming alongside the suffering to encourage them to have those transformative relational experiences rather than the transactional medicine that we're currently having.
Yes. Good. That's a good word. I had a chance to meet Gordon Chen when I was in Miami.
Oh, right.
And what they're doing is an incredible thing and a fascinating model. In fact, we can put this in the show notes. Dr. Mike Chupp had a chance, I think, along with Bert Jones, to speak with Gordon about leadership and again, about the ChenMed model as well. So I wanted to go back to something you said earlier. You talked about the brokenness that we face. Know, if somebody has a biblical anthropology, we understand the source of that. We understand the fall and we understand that. But what would you say is, you know, in light of that brokenness, I mean, why, in what ways is society at large struggling with well-being, struggling, you know, in terms of flourishing? What's at the source, or what are you seeing in terms of some of the drivers in that regard?
Well, I mean, from a kind of more of a philosophical perspective, and this is where I get in my little elevator pitch as to what a human is, and then what the elements are, or the kind of the big 30-second view for human flourishing is that we talked about the multidimensional model, biologic, psychologic, social, and spiritual, that in order for human flourishing to come about, those four dimensions, I think, have to be in balance, working in harmony and oriented towards what some of the philosophers might call the basic goods, which include life, health, work, play, knowledge, aesthetic experience, friendship, marriage, personal integrity, and harmony with the divine. I took those straight from Christopher Tolleson, who's the co-author of the book, The Way of Medicine, along with Dr. Farr Curlin. Mm-hmm. Highly recommend the book. A little shout out for those guys. I give that book away. I've probably given more than 100 copies away. It's so good. And that's where I was introduced to this notion of basic goods and how we can then rightly order the goods in our lives. Okay. So the basic goods should be then prioritized. And then some, certainly from a Christian perspective, would say, of course, harmony with the divine or harmony with God would then be the ultimate of the basic goods. And then the other nine would then be penultimate or slightly less goods, really. But nevertheless, what is the problem in the current culture today? I would just merely say it's just being out of balance. Those four dimensions are increasingly becoming more and more out of balance. They're not working in harmony towards one another. Ultimately, from a theological perspective, that's just sin run amok, okay? But to call it in a more philosophical terms, I call it the tyranny of the psychologic. And people in the last few decades have talked about this in terms of kind of this narcissism of the culture or the narcissism, this inward turning. Carl Truman is what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Call about expressive individualism. Mm-hmm. So where we look inside of ourselves to try to find and then express whatever it is that we think truly about ourselves. So it's a very self-centered, psychologically dimension-focused sort of thing. But most, you know, the positive psychologists, you know, of the Marty Seligman group and things like that, none of that is actually the empirical result. You know, if you look inside yourself, that does not empirically give or bring about well-being or flourishing. Mm-hmm. And really, when you look at their little acronym called PERMA, most of those things, just like almost all of them, are outward focused. So whether it be the A, an accomplishment for its own sake, or the M, meaning, you know, you're serving something greater than yourself, okay? And that's a very Viktor Frankl thing. And of course, that's a very Christ-like thing, of course, you know, where we need to deny ourselves and take up our cross and follow him, you know, that we should honor others and put their needs before our own needs and things like that. But the culture, particularly the kind of the hyper-materialism that goes along with the culture, and then now the digital revolution has driven us more and more inward psychologically, making us further and further out of balance. So really, when we look at the human body, we can see when the GI system is out of balance, it affects the whole body, okay? And the same thing, I think, can be made here with these four dimensions, is that more and more time you spend only in that psychologic dimension, the more and more you're going to become out of balance. And really, there's psychologic models such as depression and things like rumination, where you keep thinking about yourself or thinking about yourself. And that in and of itself is, in a sense, sinful. But in another sense, sometimes people can't help it because their brains have now become so dysfunctional because of that continued way of thinking that they cannot help but think, you know, that way, or they cannot help but be anxious in spite of the fact that they know it's not good for them. So it's a bit like a muscle, or it's a bit like a spiritual discipline. The more you practice it, the more it will, you know, neurons that wire together or fire together. Wire together is another one of the expressions. And so the same thing with like muscles and things of that nature. So, you know, we are the creatures or the products of a million little habits that we form each and every day. And then once you've gone down that road, like anybody in medicine knows, you know, a person who is very overweight with a very, very poor diet and no exercise in their life, getting them to reverse those sort of things is much, much more difficult than actually taking a person who isn't that far down the road. You know, maybe they're only 5 or 10 pounds overweight, and they just need to be re-encouraged to start getting back into that exercise program. So again, it's being out of balance. And again, that psychologic is being driven and propelled forward by the materialism of the culture and the digital revolution as well. So we really need to tame our screen time, which can be a real problem for many of us, really.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about those four components as they come together. How can a physician, medical trainee, as we're most of our audience is, incorporate that into their practice? What are some very tangible, practical ways they can see that expressed in the practice?
Yeah, well, certainly I think we as physicians and those who are physician trainees or dental trainees, anyone in the health professions, I think, should be at the lead of these, modeling these things. So really, some of what I call it is you can't multitask. You can just merely task switch, usually causes problems. But I think that what you can do is live multidimensionally. Mm. So what that means is that bringing the harmony of those four dimensions together, and again, getting out of that psychologic dimension. So we, at our house for many, many years when our kids were younger, we had a UR Next dial on the refrigerator that my wife had made. And so the UR Next was, it would point to whoever's turn it was to go ahead and pick the DVD for either a Tuesday or Saturday night. So those were the two nights of the week that we decided to do it. And so what we then would do is that each person would then take their turn. Now, sometimes the kids would say, oh, I don't want to watch that. Well, you know how kids are, you know, they're trying to coerce their brother or sister into watching what they want to watch, right? And then I would snuff that out, okay? Mm. And then we didn't really realize it later on, but we would pop popcorn, and so we would feed the biologic in a sense, but we really, what we were doing is we were living multidimensionally. Okay. So what we would do is that psychologically, hopefully we would watch a movie that was inspiring or funny or something along those lines. The biologic is that we would be having some popcorn and enjoying that. Mm-hmm. The social is that we were doing it together. Mm-hmm. Okay. But then the spiritual, I've had some thinking about what the spiritual dimension is. And you see a variety of interpretations of the spiritual dimension and definitions of the spiritual dimension. Some of them might be things that you find meaningful, things that, you know, you feel oneness with or something along those lines. But I think the spiritual dimension, like Daniel Somasi says, is the dimension of the transcendent. And then I just asked myself, well, what is the transcendent? And then I kept coming back to the good, the true, and the beautiful, things that are good, meaning the virtues, you know, things like the cardinal virtues, the theological virtues, so justice and temperance and prudence and fortitude, along with faith, hope, and love. Mm-hmm. And then the truth would just be anything that was transcendently true, certainly the nature and character of God, the sinfulness and fallenness of humanity, but also scientific principles and truths of that. And really what we're doing is we're trying to understand the mind of God, really, is what we're trying to do when we're trying to engage in transcendent truths. And then finally, things that are transcendently beautiful. Mm-hmm. And there's a variety of things that are transcendently beautiful. Mm-hmm. But then I said that the culmination of everything that's good, true, and beautiful is really culminated in the person and work of Jesus Christ, who embodied perfectly all the virtues. He didn't not just spoke the truth, although he did that, but he said that he was the truth. Right. And then finally, you know, he is the most beautiful person and the most beautiful story ever told. Mm. Okay. So really when it gets back down to the UR Next and watching DVDs, I mean, that was down that rabbit trail for a second, but coming back is that by allowing others in that social dimension. And the social dimension is so critical for the formation and the propagation of the virtues, is that we allow then, and we know about temperance, we know about justice, okay? So it's just if people are taking turns that we allow them then to take their turn in right order, and that we don't try to coerce them into doing or watching a DVD that I want to watch and that maybe they don't want to watch and stuff. And certainly love is the thing that ties all those virtues together. And that's how we express that love, is that desire for the good of another. And so what we did is, by watching DVDs together and popping the popcorn, is that we lived multidimensionally. Now, how can we bring that into the medical practice, right? Yeah, that's a tough thing to do, particularly in our day and age where there's so many constraints and pressures from time and money and things of that nature. But we really have to continually ask ourselves on a day-to-day basis, just like the virtues, you know, either you're living a virtuous life or going down the life of unvirtue, or is by all those small little decisions that we make every day. And so I always ask my residents, I said, what we need to do with every patient encounter, with everything that we do is are we prioritizing effectiveness or efficiency? Hmm. And we just need to ask ourselves that. Am I trying to get them out as fast as I can, or am I trying to be as effective as I can? And so what we're going to end up doing is if we prioritize effectiveness, and we're not going to be perfect in this. Mm-hmm. And like I tell folks in my talks on the basic good, redeeming the basic good of work, is that in order to redeem the basic good of work, we need to do two things as individuals. That is to love the work that we're doing, and in this case, medicine or dentistry, mm-hmm. for its own internal good, not because they call us doctor or we paid a good money at the end of the day, but for its own excellence. And then we have to love the people associated with it. So mm-hmm. the people we work with, the people we're working for, and things like that. Now, sometimes it's hard mm-hmm. to love people who, are suffering because we're not seeing them on their best side. So subsequently, the importance of developing the virtues and a strong spiritual foundation, because sometimes, I want to be good, but this person is testing me, mm-hmm. or really God is allowing some circumstances to find out where my heart is and that I need to be closer to him. And so really we need to be prayed up. We need to encourage one another as fellow believers when we have those difficult encounters with patients and with colleagues and things of that nature, to go ahead and live the more noble and virtuous life, the life that Christ himself would want us to live. And then certainly from an institutional perspective, I say that there's three things the institution can do that actually harms the good of our work. And I call them, like an alliteration. They can degrade, dilute, or distort the good of our work. And degrading it is probably one of the most important factors currently. They don't give us enough time and or resources to do the job properly, okay? So we have to continue to be advocates for the right amount of time with the right amount of resources. And this is kind of where a little bit of efficiency starts to come in as well, is because, I don't want to be just inefficient in everything. I want efficient electronic medical records. I want efficient information. I want an efficiency when it comes to these non-relational things, okay? So I should be able to go ahead and load up the information onto the electronic medical record very efficiently. So that way I can then maximize the amount of time I spend with patients. And really at the end of the day, the institution, whenever it invokes a new procedure or policy or something like that, the first question I think they need to ask is, will this increase or decrease the amount of time that healthcare professionals can spend with patients? Hmm. If the answer is it decreases it, we have got to have some really strong reasons as to why we're now sacrificing this very, very important and precious time, because that's that social dimension of the humanity that's so important to help transform lives, to encourage patients to do the right thing, to exercise, to take their medicines, that sort of thing as well. And so those certainly then dilute, being a government guy, I know all about computer-based training, and I think we all just roll our eyes. And I think I made the wry comment yesterday. Oh, there's a special place in hell for people who design these computer-based training modules, because they just seem so like, who does this? But nevertheless, I think they're not beyond redemption. But I think computer-based training can go a long way to decreasing the good of our work, because it distracts us from other things, and there really needs to be quite value added. And then finally, distortion, which is where the ethics of medicine are currently really interplaying. And I know I've chatted with the Canadian Physicians for Life a couple of times, and certainly they're under even greater tension and pressures up in Canada than we are in America. But, we just have to look north to Canada to find out where we might be in a very short period of time. And so the distortion comes when we're distorting the internal good, in this case, the health of the patient, for some other good, whether it be sexual experience or some sort of personal identity, such as we see in transgender things, or, we're ending people's lives just because they ask for it. And really, when we look at that multidimensional model, the end of life decisions are usually, it's an existential crisis, meaning it's a spiritual dimension problem or social or they don't want to be a burden on others, which is really, again, it's a social problem. It's really, you know, I call it biologic solutions for social or spiritual problems. You know, transgenderism is a similar problem. It's a biologic solution for a psycho and now increasingly psychosocial problem, because now you can see how those two dimensions are working now synergistically against the biologic and certainly against the spiritual. I mean, no one would say in their right mind that we're being temperate or prudent about giving life-altering hormones or surgical procedures and taking away irreversibly reproductive capabilities and things like that. That's not temperate or prudent. It might be expedient, it might be easy, and it might be, you know, financially reimbursable, but nevertheless, it's not for the best of the patient. When we talk about, you know, a holistic sort of model where we're trying to bring healing to the person, trying to restore and bring balance and harmony to all those dimensions. So,
Chris, thank you so much for giving of yourself and your time for this podcast. And we just really, again, appreciate all you're doing and the ways that, again, God is using you to speak into such an important and relevant topic of our day, this idea of flourishing, because I think we can all agree there's a lot of challenges in our current culture, certainly. There's the brokenness you suggested, the issues of well-being, burnout, a lack of balance, and not living out of all of those four quadrants as you laid out. So this is an important and timely conversation, and thank you so much for being our guest and for sharing the things that you did. I always like to give my guests, maybe if there's a closing remark or something you want to leave, particularly our trainees, what would you say to them?
I would say, you know, go ahead and continue to really take God's promises seriously. Mm-hmm. I know personally, as a resident, I came out of being a flight surgeon for about 8 or 9 years, which mm-hmm. was a great experience, had lots of fun, but I don't think it prepared me for, you know, high-tech medicine at all. So I mm-hmm. felt really like I had to study every day, every moment, and I had young children and mm-hmm. stuff. And I was just feeling like I was getting wound up and anxious. And then the Lord just reminded me, keep the Sabbath day holy, mm-hmm. you know. I want you to rest on this day because you can rest in my promises that I will be your provider. I'm the good shepherd, mm. you know? And so I went ahead and took that seriously, and I didn't just barely pass, but I was getting over 90% plus on the in-service exams. And then I had a mentee several years later, and he was experiencing similar things. And I said, hey, Matt, why don't you go ahead and just take, you know, have you considered taking the Sabbath day and keeping that holy and making it a day of rest? And he did well in the program as well. And then additionally, he also was the outstanding resident of the entire hospital, which was the first time that that had ever happened for a radiology resident. So again, just rest in the Lord, rest in his promises, rest in his goodness and in his presence.
Oh, that's a good word. We treat ourselves too much like machines, like we're finite creatures. We only have the capacity to do so much, and the Sabbath is not an intrusion, but rather it's a great and wonderful gift from our Lord. So we definitely, that is an important word for us all. So thank you, Chris, and thank you all for joining us on this latest episode of CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast. I'll see you next time. Well, it's this time of the podcast where we tell you some things you need to know. As always, you can find CMDA Student Life on all of our social media properties using the handle and username CMDA Student Life. And you'll find us on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, X. And if you go to cmdastudentlife.org, you'll find a section in there for show notes. And so you'll be able to get all the important links that we discussed in this episode. Also, we want to draw your attention to CMDA's premier event, and that is our national convention. In 2025, May 1st through the 4th, our CMDA national convention will be taking place right outside of St. Louis, Missouri, in St. Charles at the Convention Center. It's a great location. And as a student, I want to call your attention to some opportunities we have just for you. So if you go to natcon.cmda.org, you'll go right there to our National Convention landing page. But at the very top, there's a button for students and residents. Go ahead and click that, because information will be there for scholarships, transportation, ride sharing, hotels, and all that information will be there just for students, as well as information about our VIE poster session. So anything student or trainee related is going to be there on the site. But in particular, I want to call your attention to scholarship money, because we know finances can be tight. We know they are, but there is a generosity of spirit in CMDA. And so we've been able to raise scholarship money that's going to help underwrite not only your registration costs, but potentially some of your transportation and housing costs. So again, check it all out at natcon.cmda.org. And we're hoping and praying for about 220 students from all around the country to join us there at St. Charles. So it's going to be an incredible event, an event that you don't want to miss. Well, thank you again for joining us for this episode of CMDA Student Pulse Podcast. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the organization. CMDA is non-partisan and does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on Student Pulse Podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members.